You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to episode number 333 of Locked On Raptors for Tuesday? Yeah, it's Tuesday, May 15th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of LockedOnRaptors.com and RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter, as always, at WoodleySean. Find the show at Locked On Raptors, where you can find links to every single episode. Of course, make sure you're checking out the Locked On Podcast Network as well, which hosts team-focused shows for all 30 NBA teams. You got Locked On Fantasy with Josh Lloyd. You got daily episodes of Locked On NBA from a whole array of different hosts from the network. And you can find those all together, neatly organized for your listening pleasure, on the Locked On NBA iTunes channel. Each show has its own separate feed as well. On Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, all the places you find podcasts. So please, if you find a show or host that you dig, subscribe, rate, review their work. It's very helpful. And the same goes for Locked On Raptors. If you find the page, please leave a rating or review. It's the best way to help out the show. Shows that you care, builds our visibility and stuff like that. So thanks in advance for taking the time. Sorry we didn't have a podcast on Monday. I was a little busy and was a little sad about the Raptors and the state of things. So I decided to take the day off and get back into it today. And I'm joined today to talk about a subject that is probably going to go counter to a lot of what this podcast has been over 332 episodes. We're going to dive into a realm where Celtic slander is not really present, but to join me for that is Joe Wolfon from The Score. How's it going, buddy?
It's going about as well as it can be going, considering I'm preparing myself to praise the Celtics. So, yeah, not bad.
Look, man, I've been dreading it all day, too. I came up with this idea overnight, and I'm already regretting it. But, hey, respect where it's due, I suppose. The Celtics are very good, and I'm kind of interested to talk about them sort of through the prism of the Raptors and sort of comparing the two and the rosters and, like, I don't know. When I was watching Game 1 and sort of just, like, reading the stuff after it and just sort of evaluating what it is the Celtics do well and how they're built, I think there's been a lot of jokes pointed the Raptors away, of course, because that's what everything on the NBA internet is now, until something else hilarious happens to, like, the Rockets or something. But through it all, like, there's been this prevailing sentiment, I think, that the Raptors roster was just so much better than the Celtics and that, it's an embarrassment that they lost. Whereas I look at the roster for the Celtics, and yes, they're down Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, and obviously that cuts into their talent and their depth, but when I look at the Celtics roster, I kind of see a perfectly built roster. Jonathan Charks kind of wrote about this today, how they're sort of following the Warriors model a little bit on the Ringer. And I don't know, I can't really help but agree that I think, looking at it, the Celtics roster kind of makes a lot more sense for a LeBron matchup, and just as like a general NBA matchup, than the current iteration of the Raptors roster. But I don't know, just general thoughts on that statement alone, Joe.
Well, I kind of agree and disagree. I think you're right that they're extremely well built to weather the LeBron matchup. And I don't know if that necessarily, like, I guess maybe by extension that just means that they are like a better built roster than the Raptors, because mm-hmm. that at the end of the day kind of is the only matchup that matters, right?
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think that they are like a better team. And I'll say this, like, the Raptors were at a matchup disadvantage, and I think we saw that borne out in that series. But at the same time, like, the Raptors did not play well in that series, and like that series was not an accurate representation of what that team was capable of. And maybe just given how poorly they matched up with the Cavs, they didn't have what it took to win that series, but they absolutely had what it took to make that a competitive series and not just get embarrassed the way that they did. Like, there was no excuse really for them to get swept by this Cavs team, which is not good. Like, they're not that good a team, and the Raptors made them look like world beaters. So I think that has to be taken into account. At the same time, like, I think you have like really seen the value of just having an army of versatile large wings, where you can kind of switch pretty much everything, you know, 1 through 4, and especially against a guy like LeBron. But like, the Raptors had pretty much one guy who could match up with him one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
and that created a lot of problems for them. And then, you know, even if you look at kind of what they were doing off of the ball, the ability to switch, you know, say like Kevin Love and Kyle Korver off ball screening actions is also really important and really valuable. And the Raptors just didn't have that capability, and it opened everything up for the Cavs. So I don't know, that's kind of where I'm at. I definitely think that this matchup is far worse for the Cavs. But I also think the Raptors are way better than what they showed. So I guess I kind of land somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I guess my counter to that would be, like, even if the Raptors roster top to bottom was performing to its potential, you have Serge Ibaka not just being a complete pumpkin, and you have, you know, Jakob Poeltl, you know, doing his rim protection thing that he did all regular season and forgot how to do in the playoffs, and you had, you know, Fred VanVleet shooting well. Like, I still think the same issues are there matchup-wise against LeBron or against any team that, you know, like if you're ever going to try to employ a switching scheme, which seems like it's going to be the way to go in the NBA. Chris Herring wrote about this yesterday. This has been a thing for not just this season, of course, but like it really does feel like this is the season where everyone's just kind of realizing, and I think the Raptors realized this, you know, in the hard way, that like, yeah, switching is pretty helpful and is kind of the way that you want to go about defending, especially a LeBron team, but a lot of these other teams as well. And I just, when I look at the Raptors roster, I'm not sure if it's really constructed to do that. And I think there are certain lineups that maybe you can sort of squeak by with a one, you know, four position switchability. But I do kind of think it's a little bit sort of, you know, encumbered a little bit by the fact that DeMar DeRozan is such an important player on the team, and that Serge Ibaka is such a, you know, hit or miss kind of player, and Jonas Valanciunas was probably the third best Raptor this season, and that dude ain't switching on anybody, and he got roasted by, you know, the Korver Love actions during the series. And I don't know, I'm trying to find a way in which this Raptors team becomes something like what the Celtics are right now. And like, I think OG and Pascal are definitely keys to that, and I think they're really good, and I think even Yak has some ability to switch on smaller guys. Like, maybe he can sort of mold himself in the way of a Clint Capella or something like that. I don't think he's going to be as good, but like something along those lines. But I do think there's like a lot of just limitation, either whether it's size or just guys being one-dimensional, like CJ Miles, who's only an offensive threat at this point. Same with DeMar. And then you have Kyle and Fred, who are just not going to be able to switch on to bigger guys, especially as Kyle sort of ages, you know, into the back half of his career here. I don't know. I've been pretty, and like all the, this is all comes with the caveat that like I'm team run it back all the way. But I do think that if you're trying to like look at ways in which the Raptors can improve, the star player stuff definitely is a thing. Like, obviously they need better stars if they're going to be better than what they are. But I also just like don't know if they have the horses to build a defense that's going to be capable of, you know, really thriving in the playoffs. So that we're kind of at the point now where the offense has been squared away, but the defense, I think, is still a major question mark.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that goes to, you know, there's like that stat floating out there toward the end of the regular season about how the Raptors, despite having a top five defense overall, were like 29th against top 10 offenses.
Yeah.
And I feel like that does sort of go to their inability to switch. And when you go up against elite talent and they can put you in compromising positions, like that's really what you need to be able to do to mitigate that is just not allow yourself to get totally scrambled. I think there was just like a lot of panic that set in, and maybe that was the result of kind of knowing that there were so many unfavorable matchups that the Cavs could exploit if they got the switch that they wanted. Mm-hmm. That you lost count of how many times two Raptors ended up chasing the ball on a game by game basis. Like, they, I don't know really from one possession to the next what their plan was, whether they wanted to switch pick and roll or whether they just wanted to hedge. Because the Raptors didn't seem to know, you know, like the communication wasn't there. It was just, it just kind of registered as sheer panic. And I feel like if you're a Celtics team that has the faith, in the five guys on the floor and in their ability to kind of check whoever they get switched onto, then, you know, there isn't any need for that panic. Like, there isn't any need to have two guys running after the ball, or for guys basically not to know who they're supposed to be covering. It just makes everything a little bit easier. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess to put it simplistically, like maybe the answer is just to try and find more big two-way wings. Like the Raptors maybe don't have enough two-way players. Like everybody is a little bit one-dimensional. Like who's the best two-way player that they have? You know, who is like kind of comparable in terms of being a high-end offensive and defensive player? Like Siakam?
Probably peak Lowry, but even then he's limited, right? And it's not always engaged. Siakam is probably there. Maybe OG becomes that guy. But yeah, it's ideally it would be like engaged and not flaky Serge. But that seems to be a far gone thing.
I think that ship has sailed, unfortunately. Yeah. like if we were going to get engaged Serge, you kind of figured that it would have happened this postseason, right? Like considering just how much was riding on it.
Yeah.
If you're not going to get engaged Serge in basically the most important series in Raptors history, like I don't know when you're going to get him.
I almost wish we had not seen him have that a killer first game against the Wizards and that he was just shit the entire time, because it would be like a little less tantalizing. You see like what a fully realized Ibaka is and like how much that just sort of raises the floor of the team. But yeah, I think a lot of this kind of circles around Ibaka and even DeRozan as well to an extent. Like, I love DeMar, and again, I'm fully on bring DeMar back. Like I've accepted the Raptors a lot in life, and I'm happy with 50 plus win seasons, even if they end terribly in the playoffs every season. Like a new coach, I think will sort of inject a little bit of maybe some optimism as to, you know, some sort of ceiling or that they can scrape that they haven't quite yet. I'm not sure I totally buy it, but I think people will buy into it because people always buy in come September. But I do think there are some like significant issues with DeMar and the fact that he can't defend anybody, and Serge again, just the fact that he was supposed to be like this secret weapon they could bust out at center against Kevin Love and have him next to Pascal Siakam, and part of that's on Dwayne Casey for not really using it until the chips were really down late in the series. But also part of it is that Serge was so unplayable for a couple games there that it just, you couldn't really risk putting him out there if he was going to be such a nothing on offense and pair him next to Siakam, who also, you know, was not really getting guarded and stuff like that. And honestly, I don't know. I guess I found myself very impressed by the Celtics, and it's disgusting. I feel gross. And I'm not, I'm very staunchly anti-Cult of Stevens. I think, like, their roster gets pretty underrated, I think, whether it's a factor of youth or just, like, underrated counting stats in the case of Al Horford. Like, even without Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, like, I think their roster is, like, pretty good. You know, Jaylen Brown is awesome. I teased this to you when I was setting this up with you, but I have a Jaylen Brown take, and that is, I think if you swapped Jaylen Brown and DeMar DeRozan, the Raptors maybe win that series against the Cavs?
Wow.
Like, I don't think, so I think in the regular season, like, that's, I don't buy that. DeMar was essential in the regular season, but if you, like, had, like, a first day of the playoffs trade of DeMar for Jaylen Brown, I'm not certain that hurts the Raptors. That might actually help them and like improve their sort of ability to play a, you know, more cohesive defensive system. And I don't know, maybe that's too hot of a take, but I think Jaylen Brown is like pretty awesome and kind of fits what you want out of a wing, like to a T. And yes, DeMar brings, you know, reasonably efficient high volume offense, but I do think the defensive, I think if we learn anything in these playoffs, it's that defense matters a lot more than I think we were led to believe during like the last couple of years where offense kind of was king. Like, defense matters, and if you have a guy who's just like a glaring weakness, that's going to kill you.
Yeah, and look, I agree that the Raptors would have been better served by having Jaylen Brown in that series. I just don't know if it would have been enough for them to actually win it.
Fair enough.
I'm with you as far, like, especially, it's kind of hard to argue given how DeMar played in that series. You know, if he played up to his potential in that series, then it would have been a different story. But even then, I might agree that just in that specific matchup, having Jaylen Brown would have been more beneficial. Because, yeah, like DeMar's defense is a problem. It's been a problem for a while. And the Raptors, for, I don't know, probably 5 years running now, have been better with him on the bench. And there's a lot of noise, I think, in those on-off numbers.
Mostly just Kyle Lowry being awesome noise, but
yeah, Kyle Lowry playing with the bench and like they're, you know, like just the way the team is operated. I think for one thing, the lineups with DeRozan in them would not be nearly as good if somebody else had to soak up all of those minutes and all of like the kind of scoring and playmaking duties that he's assumed over the years. So it's a little bit disingenuous to say that they're better without him, but I don't know, at a certain point, if the numbers are telling you something and the eye test is kind of backing it up, like, maybe there's something there. And with DeMar, it's kind of like the Westbrook problem a little bit.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Westbrook's a better player, but it's similar to me in that both of those guys are not really threats without the ball. They don't really move off ball that effectively. Like, they're not great cutters. DeMar, I think, is a little bit better than Westbrook, but just as a guy who's not really a spot-up shooting threat, it's hard to run your offense when that guy's on the floor, and defenses are basically have license to ignore him. And so what ends up happening naturally is you just kind of have to funnel most of your possessions through that guy and put the ball in his hands. And that leads to them playing a kind of, you know, physically tiring and punishing brand of offense that leaves them little energy to play defense. So I feel like that's, you know, a similarity, and it happens with both guys. And neither of those guys is as effective defensively as you feel like they should be given their sort of physical tools. So until that changes, I feel like it's just going to continue to be a problem. As much as I feel like DeMar rounds out his game a little bit more every year, a progress as impressive as it is really incremental. Mm-hmm. And the Raptors in this iteration, I feel like, are kind of running out of time.
Yeah.
So I don't know how patient they can afford to be, you know, waiting for him to figure out that, like, the one area of his game that he really needs to figure out is defense. I don't know. Like, I mean, defense and honestly just, like, becoming like even more of a three-point shooting threat, because as much as he was lauded for figuring that out this season, he was still what, like a 32% three-point shooter?
Yeah, 31, something like that.
Yeah, on a still, like, you know, fairly low volume of attempts. So those issues are still there, as much as he's gotten better every year. And every year in the playoffs, they are kind of laid bare when elite teams find ways to exploit him. So
yeah. Is DeMar the worst 6'7" wing defender in the league? Because it feels like everyone at that position is just good at defense now. I'm probably missing guys on, like, really shitty teams, but, like,
yeah, I know. No, I'm trying to think about it, and I am also sure that there is somebody who is worse, but
yeah,
like,
it's hard to think of one.
it's kind of inexcusable. I mean, maybe CJ Miles is worse.
Yeah.
And he's 6'8". But he's also, he's not an athlete like DeMar is an athlete, you know? Like,
yeah.
I feel like it's a little bit more excusable for CJ, who's a little bit older and doesn't quite have the strength.
Yeah.
I don't think it's for lack of capability on DeMar's part. I think it's just, it's a combination of effort and awareness. He gets lost a lot, and I don't know if the answer is just for him to, like, put that much more focus on improving himself at that end of the floor, you know, whether that's going to be the thing that he spends the summer doing after he's kind of figured out all this stuff at the offensive end. He's really turned himself into a pretty impressive passer.
Yeah.
And for all I said about how you kind of have to funnel your possessions through him at the offensive end, like, he's improved his game to the point where that's, like, a viable proposition. And the Raptors offense was really good all year, and it was really good in the playoffs for the first time ever.
Yeah, so it's very weird that we're talking about the defense as opposed to the offense. Because, I mean, the defense has not been great in the playoffs in the past, but it's always been the offense that has just been completely garbage. And it's
right.
Yeah, all still kind of revolves around DeMar, though. It's kind of inescapable.
I mean, the other thing is, like, for a while, my feeling was sort of that really good defensive teams had a better chance of succeeding in the playoffs, because if there was ever, if a team was going to kind of get nervous and have the yips, like, that would manifest at the offensive end. But, like, that defense was sort of more impervious to nerves.
Right.
Like, if you just knew what the scheme was and what you were supposed to do, you know, you can't, like, you can be nervous and miss jump shots and miss layups, but on defense, kind of, like, you just really have to try and just have to, like, execute the scheme. But honestly, like, for the Raptors, that was what happened. Like, they looked tight and panicked, and I feel like it showed at the defensive end more than anything.
Super weird. To get back to my original Celtics point, before we can go on the Mark Stein, DeMar DeRozan report as well too, but I'm finding myself talking myself into being less sort of shocked the Raptors laid such an egg. Just again, like, I'm not sold that this Celtics roster is, like, not excellent. I mean, even without Kyrie and Hayward, like I said, I mean, Brown, again, you could argue that he's more of a playoff useful player in certain situations and matchups, especially against LeBron, than DeMar. Jason Tatum is ridiculous. He's like, if you're just comparing like starting fives, you give Lowry the edge over any of the Celtics guards, but I think you could make an argument that each of the other four positions that the Celtics would have an edge. I mean, Al Horford, I think, is the like a dream playmaker for, and just like a dream defensive anchor who can defend a bunch of different positions and sort of do all the things that we wish Jonas Valanciunas could do. Marcus Morris somehow is just a way more useful player than Serge Ibaka at this point. Jason Tatum is better than OG Anunoby. And then when the Raptors bench was like kind of going through it a little bit, I mean, like it just, that sort of lets it all down. So I am not overly surprised in hindsight. You know, obviously the Raptors fooled, and you wrote about this, the Raptors fooled us, man. Like, they fooled us into believing, but I looking at the two rosters, I don't really have any sort of argument to say that the Raptors are clearly better than what the Celtics have right now, and that's probably a problem. That's probably an indictment of Masai Ujiri or whatever, but I don't really think you have to place blame. I just think it's kind of the reality, and I think that's fine, and winning 50 games is fun, and I'm okay with that, and I think this addition of the Raptors is probably capped out in terms of reaching its potential, but I'm still okay with that, and I'll deal with it for another year or two, and I'll enjoy the regular season and buy into it all over again. But I don't know. It's the Celtics are just so exhaustingly good, and they're set up so well, and it bothers me. And like, I was listening today to the Zach Lowe, Bill Simmons podcast, and I'm just like, I should be mad at how much Celtics praise is here, but there's just nothing you can argue against. Like, they're set up perfectly. Yes, they got gifted a bullshit trade that somehow got allowed, even though the Chris Paul Lakers trade got vetoed, and they got a decade of picks from the Nets, and that set themselves up, and they have all these other picks coming up, and like, they've, I don't know, it's, I think it's, you know, the thing I liked about the Simmons Lowe podcast today was that they didn't really go too deep into the cult of Stevens stuff, because like, I do think Stevens is being way over sort of credited, and not, and like, to get to my point, like, I think the roster's a lot better than people are saying, and I think the roster deserves like a ton of credit for what they've done. But yeah, like, if you're a Raptors fan and you're looking at this Boston team and how it's built, like, where do you find hope that the Raptors can replicate something similar? Because you can't really. You're not going to happen into the picks that they just like had fell in their laps. But like, I don't know. What do you think should be like a path forward here? If you're Masai Ujiri trying to sort of recalibrate how to build this team, you've seen what's not worked in the playoffs the last 5 years. Like, what do you sort of look at? You know, do you use the Celtics as sort of a building block and sort of like a blueprint, I guess, or do you have to sort of go somewhere else? I don't know. The Celtics are frustrating me is essentially my point, Joe.
Yeah, no, I can understand that for sure. And I just want to say to your point, like, first of all, I think Brad Stevens does deserve a lot of credit. I think he's done an awesome job and is a really good coach, like probably a top three coach in the NBA right now. And I'm continually impressed just by like his game planning and the way that like the players execute. And I think he deserves credit for that, but the players obviously do too. And I'm with you. Like, I think the way that people talk about the Celtics team is always sort of in terms of how surprising they are, or like how hard they play, or how smart they play. And the subtext there is always sort of that they're, you know, playing over their heads. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, I don't know, maybe they're just really good.
Yeah.
So, that they are like that. That's where we're at. They're a really good team. And as far as replicating it, I mean, I think the closest thing the Raptors can come to doing that is basically committing to the young guys that they have, that still have a lot of upside. And that, to me, is OG and Siakam, and probably to a lesser extent, DeLon Wright, Fred VanVleet, Jakob Poeltl. Make sure that you don't lock yourself into any bad long-term contracts. Maybe see if, like, I mean, I don't think you're trading any of those guys just for the sake of trading them, except for maybe Serge.
Yeah.
Who, like, if you can find somebody to take on that contract, then yeah, absolutely, trade him just to trade him. But for, like, DeMar and Kyle and JV, I think unless you can find, like, a, you know, like a absolute winner of a trade, I think you play out the next 2 years. Because you're still going to be good for the next 2 years. You're going to give those young guys like another couple of years to grow without putting too much responsibility on their shoulders. Mm-hmm. And I think that'll be sort of like a slow transition of responsibility within the team infrastructure. And hopefully you get to a point where those guys cycle out, their contracts come off the books, the young guys have sort of come into their own and are hopefully on like reasonable extensions. And that's when you have like a deep and versatile team, and you also have like a lot of cap space to play with.
Yeah.
Because that was, you know, that was sort of what the Celtics did. Like their young guys kind of developed and grew together, and they didn't have any bad contracts, so they had cap room to sign Al Horford and then to sign Gordon Hayward. And I don't think it's going to end up working out that well for the Raptors because they're not going to have all those picks to make swing for the fences trade, like, you know, trading for Kyrie. But and they're not going to get top three picks to get Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum types. But Masai's obviously proven that he can find gold late in the first round. So I don't know what you do about this year. I mean, maybe they buy a second-round pick.
Yeah.
That they manage to hit on. But yeah, I think that's your sort of best course. It's like unless and until you can find like a home run trade for one of those three guys, I think you just kind of let this window play itself out and hope you can continue developing those young guys into a core that can be, you know, a sustainable winner.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you. We can leave off with some more trade talk, I guess, because, you know, Mark Stein threw out the thing today that the Raptors explored trading DeMar DeRozan last summer. And, you know, really the only way you alluded to the fact that the Raptors don't have a pick this season, the only way that they're doing anything of sort of, you know, upgrading the roster is with a trade this summer. And I don't really see a path to that happening. If people are like getting excited about like making a big deal, like I think if you're going to make a big deal, it probably comes at the expense of what you just talked about. And that was sort of, you know, keeping OG and Pascal and sort of grooming them to become the sort of the next sort of foundational pieces for the team a couple of years from now. Like, I feel like if you're trying to make a big swing this summer, those dudes are definitely getting traded because you have no other picks to sort of dangle to, you know, lessen the prospect capital they have to send out. So I take it you're against the idea of sort of consolidating some of this youth to try to make some big deal to sort of pair next to Kyle and DeMar, because that's kind of where I am. I think that to do that, you're still sort of overrating what Kyle and DeMar can do as your best players. And again, I love Kyle and DeMar, but I think they've kind of proven that they have a ceiling with them as the two best players on a team. I don't think you're getting a player better than them if you consolidate these young guys, and then I think you're sort of setting yourselves up for more disappointment when you get to the playoffs, or say, I don't even know who you know, throw out there as a third guy, but like, you're not in that camp, I suppose, of trying to consolidate the young guys to make a deal?
Yeah, I mean, the obvious answer is it depends.
Yeah,
It depends who's actually realistically going to be available and what the package would look like. I mean, obviously, if there's a chance to get Kawhi, I think, you know, I would throw in pretty much anything.
Yeah.
But as far, like, my point is, like, if you have a chance to acquire someone who's going to be your best player, you know, who's going to be better than Kyle and DeMar, and you keep those guys, and then you have, like, a really strong three-man core, and, like, you don't completely decimate your depth, then I'm willing to think about it. But because that doesn't seem at all realistic to me, I am more in favor of, I'm not in favor of like making some tweaks if there are tweaks to be made, but I just think for the most part, yeah, I'm on team run it back as well, because what you have, obviously, like, you know, you kind of saw the ceiling of the team in the playoffs, but you still have a pretty good setup, you know, where you have a really good mix of veterans and young players, and there's still a lot of talent there. And there are guys who are comfortable playing together and like really familiar with each other. And I think it's just like a good opportunity to have a sort of Spurs-like model.
Yeah.
You know, they're not as good as the Spurs. They're probably not ever going to be as good as the Spurs. But you have a situation where there are these vets who are kind of starting to cycle out at the same time that you would expect the young guys to start coming into their own. And that just gives you a chance to continue to make the playoffs year after year, continue to have a top four seed year after year, and give yourself a chance. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're getting dusted in the second or third round every year, I mean, what are you going to do? But like, I don't think you just punt on a really successful team just because you are tired of watching them lose in the playoffs. I don't think that's smart asset management.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think it can get kind of bleak if you look at it through the terms of the Celtics, like we have in this podcast a little bit, although we kind of steered off track because it was a weak premise to begin with. But I think it can get dark if you look at it that way, or if you look at, you know, sort of the ceilings of Kyle and DeMar. But like, ultimately, like, I don't know, today's draft lottery day. The Raptors aren't sitting here hoping ping pong balls sort of dictate their future. Like, things are much better than I think we would be led to believe by the sort of conversations and sort of the just the uproar of anti-Raptor takes that came out after the Celtics won game one against the Cavs. Things are all right. And I think, you know, it's okay to be upset and okay to sort of, you know, look with sort of longing eyes at teams like Boston and say, I wish we were them. But, you know, your own situation's pretty good too if you're a Raptors fan. So we can leave it there. But
okay.
You have something to add.
Well, I'll add, like, it doesn't mean that I'm not pessimistic about it, because I do think, you know, at a certain point there are diminishing returns. You know, like, the longer it goes on, if you continue to kind of run into the same roadblocks or flame out in the same way, I just think, eventually there is a shelf life. And I mean, we're seeing that now, right? Like, the fact that Dwayne Casey is gone is a testament to the fact that there's a shelf life. And as much as you can kind of just keep running it back and keep having a certain measure of success, eventually, like, you need to at least try something different. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's where I'm at, is like, I'm all for trying something different. And to me, like, changing the coach is sort of like the most viable way of doing that, because of all the things I mentioned before about how hard it's going to be, like, fundamentally change the roster and have it be a win. Mm-hmm. And have it be like a sort of smart basketball move. But again, like, if you do bring in a new coach and keep the roster more or less the same, and the same things continue to happen, then obviously I think it's, you know, you're going to have to start looking harder at just, going the rebuild from the ground up route eventually.
All good points, man. I'm ready for, like, the off season to happen and, like, to, like, not think about the Raptors for a couple months, to be honest.
I'm with you.
It's been a little somber. But again, you're not looking at ping pong balls today. Like, things could be worse. Joe, thanks for coming on, man. This was fantastic. Where can people check out your work? Do you have anything you got to plug right now?
I have like, two pretty emotional pieces that I wrote about the Raptors.
They were excellent.
Thank you. One about, like, just the season and kind of like this Raptors era as a whole, and one about Dwayne Casey and his firing. So you can check those out at The Score. I have an NBA podcast also at The Score. It's called Pound the Rock with William Liu and Joseph Cacciaro. And you can listen to that on iTunes or SoundCloud on Mondays. And yeah, check it out. Check me out on Twitter, Joey_W, and I tweet out all my work. You can follow me there.
Never ever heard of either of your co-hosts, but they sound nice.
Yeah, they're all right.
You also got tennis stuff coming up soon too, don't you?
I do, yeah.
That's exciting.
I'll hopefully be able to plug that soon. French Open starts in like 2 weeks, so I will be writing a lot of tennis stuff starting from there and basically all through the summer. It's actually like a really nice break for me from basketball and like somber Raptors pops. So yeah, it'll be a nice transition and a welcome one.
Well, there is no break for me on this podcast, seeing as it is daily throughout the next little while. So you'll be hearing me all this week. We're going to start doing some player review podcasts for the season. I'm going to get the trivia back going because we're down to the Elite Eight, and I totally forgot to do the trivia during the playoffs. So we'll have the Elite Eight coming up very soon on the Locked On Raptors Trivia Tournament. We will do our prop bets as well coming up as well to sort of review those with Vivek Jacob and Sahal Abdi. And, there's not much draft stuff to do, which I'm happy about because I don't really care about the draft. And also, Draft Express is dead, and there's no good Mike Schmitz videos anymore. So I would be even more clueless than I normally am. But there'll be stuff coming up previewing the offseason all throughout the next few weeks and daily to through on, like, till mid-July. So Thanks everyone for tuning in. Subscribe, rate, review on iTunes. Please do that. When you go to Pound the Rock, make sure you also go to Locked On Raptors. It's just do a little double dip. It's very helpful. It's nice to do. Best way to support the show without spending any money or anything like that. And that's going to do it. Thanks so much. We're going to be back again tomorrow. I'll probably do an episode actually with Brad Rowland from Locked On Hawks to talk about Mike Budenholzer. Just sort of get the Coles notes on him. And until then, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you next time on Locked On Raptors.